Are we ready, Bobby? The Jason Mitchell Show. It's exciting when you have friends on the show. So I want to welcome my good friend, PGA extraordinaire, golf coach, great buddy for a long time, Mr. Boyd Summerhays. Welcome to the show.
Jason, I'm pumped.
I'm pumped you're here. I'm glad that we didn't do this on Zoom and you actually came into the office.
It's good to see you. Got home from work a little bit early and I thought, let's get down there. So,
for those of you watching, it is Phoenix Open week starting today, Monday. Wasted management. By far the busiest. Super wasted management. Such a great tournament, though.
It's so fun.
It's so fun. And I don't get into all that hoopla stuff, but it's just to go and experience it. So we start this week, and you got a busy week.
Oh, yeah.
Because not only do you have some players, you got a son playing. Tell us about what – I want to hear about Preston and kind of his sponsorship exemption that he got. But also I want to hear not just this week, but now that you have multiple pros under your belt and continue to add some, what preparation is like for you? Because we have these players that are the best in the world.
Yeah.
And you're considered one of the best coaches in the world, clearly. But you got to mentally prepare these guys for them to go out there and play the hardest mental sport in the world. How do you prepare for that?
Well, first off, just having Preston in the field is kind of surreal. It seems like yesterday he was standard bearing at age 10. It was the first time he did it. I have all these pictures of where he's teeny. He's with Grace doing it, coming out to the event. And as the years went on, you could tell he was getting a lot better. He stopped standard bearing at like 16 because he wanted to go out and watch and see it. And then he got to the age where it was like hard to watch. He's like, I'm good enough to be out here. And you always want your kids being confident, but he's always been confident. And he's just gotten a little bit better every year. He's had some big wins in his career, winning the U.S. Junior, and then he won a huge amateur event as a junior golfer, the Sonny Hanna.
That was in Ohio, right?
That one was in Pennsylvania. Oh, the U.S. Junior was in Ohio, yes. At Inverness Club. So, and then he got to play at Wingfoot in the U.S. Open and played the Barbasol PGA Tour event last year and a couple Korn Ferry events. So, yeah, this will be his first Waste Management Open. It'll be a different feel than any event he's ever played because, you know, a normal week gets 500 to 600,000 people in there. But they're saying there's going to be projected 750,000 people run through the event this week.
What a great experience, though.
Yeah, it'll be huge for him because each time he got in these tour events, he learned something. And this week, I think he's going to learn how his body and mind reacts to that adrenaline. When he comes down to that back nine, you play 15, 16, 17, 18 with all that energy, with the noise, the crowd. I think he's going to learn quite a bit from it. And he's also, the way he thinks, he's coming to compete. You know, he's ready to go.
But what a great tournament to start. Yeah. It's a mile from home, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
So cool.
So you couldn't pick a better setting to have it. He knows the course intimately, I'm sure. But I'm super proud of him, too. And I know you are. Yeah. And as I have been following him throughout his career and journey, and as we've been friends, I remember going into Utah.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget this because I was so nervous to text Barb, your wife, because we walked into the tournament and I see Preston Summerhays minus eight. So we were on vacation and we knew that he was playing and we wanted to come watch him play. So we walked in minus eight and I thought, oh shit, he's down eight strokes. Damn it. And I was like, well, I don't want to go out there with him losing like this. Like maybe we should just go. So we got back in our car. I text Barb. I said, hey, look, I don't want to be around if Boyd's upset or whatever. She goes, no, he's up eight. And I go, oh, we're coming back. Let's go.
It's like minus eight is good.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Well, it looked different. So anyways.
Jason's a true golfer. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so when we went back, that was one of the coolest experiences that I've been around, to watch him win that tournament, to watch his joy around you and the family and to be a part of that. Like that was very special. And I want to say thank you for allowing us to be a part of that because that was a really, really special day.
Yeah, that was really cool. Those pictures will be memories for a lifetime. I got a great story. Preston kind of confessed something to me. I think right now on this podcast would be a great time to do it. I wish he was here to tell it, but you made a deal with him. You told him. So that was his second men's state amateur win.
Okay.
The year before he won and he beat the record. He beat Tony Finau's record and his uncle Daniel Summerhays' record of being the youngest ever. Well, you had told him if he won, what car did you have at the time?
I let him borrow the Ferrari.
You let him borrow the Ferrari. Okay. So
You want the McLaren.
No. So he takes the Ferrari. You know how they have those cameras?
Yeah.
He might have been going a little bit faster than the speed limit.
Oh, he got flashed?
Got a ticket, but I think it got sent to you, and I'm sure your people paid for it. But anyway, you might have a little bet to settle with Preston. That's no lie. He told me.
Interesting.
He goes, Dad, can I tell you something? So, go ahead. He told me a couple months ago, and I'm like, I cannot wait to tell
Jason. Oh, that's
so
good. I would expect nothing less than that. That's amazing. No, I made a bet with him. If he won, I would let him borrow the Ferrari for the weekend. And
well, maybe if he wins this week, he gets a McLaren for a few days.
Maybe.
I think that's a fair deal.
That's a, hey, listen.
Maybe like a top 10
top
deal.
10. Yeah, top 10 gets the McLaren for the weekend.
Announced
or maybe
here.
I get the McLaren for a week.
Yeah, if he
that'd
wins.
Be nice.
If this podcast gets top 10 podcasts, then you can have the McLaren for
we're nice. Sweetening the pot. I like this.
Thanks for being here. So we have, you have other players in the field this week. You have Wyndham Clark.
Yeah, Wyndham Clark, Tony Finau, Taylor Gooch, and then Wesley Bryan.
Great.
Yeah.
Coming into this week, though, we know that the Waste Management is clearly the most insane tournament on the PGA. But it's also become what used to be looked at as it's insane, there's too much partying, to now being a staple of the year that, hey, we're getting some really good players to come back to Scottsdale.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the field this week is legit.
It's super strong.
Very strong. Yeah. So within that, we also are really kind of starting the year. You know, we had a couple tournaments. We had the Sony in Hawaii, right?
Yep.
Pebble last week.
Yeah. Torrey Pines and Palm Springs. So,
but this is really, we're still at the beginning of the year. So expectations are high. I would assume that players are still kind of finding their groove. At the beginning of the year, as one of the best coaches in the world for golf professionals, how do you try? Do you sit down with them before the year starts and map out a plan, talk about mindset, where they want to be? Do you goal chart, I guess, with your players?
Yeah, which with each of the players, with their teams, they have their, you know, agents and managers. Some of them have, you know, physical trainers. With Taylor Gooch at the end of the year, he brought his team out to Arizona. We went out to dinner every night, talked about things, played during the day. Tony, I'm with him all the time, got together with his team, made a plan of what he wanted as well. And the same with Wyndham Clark. So every player's different of what they want and how they prepare. Now, golf is definitely a unique sport in that there is no one way to do it. You look out on the range on the PGA Tour, and everybody's swings look really different. I mean, Craig, you were a great player. You know how that is. It's like you walk down a range and you think, okay, that guy's the best player, or that guy's the best player. And it's like, Jim Furyk's an amazing player with that swing. And you got Hideki, who used to pause at the top. And you got all these different actions. Even Dustin Johnson, you know, he has such a unique position at the top. Golf's cool in the sense that you can do it multiple different ways and still be really successful. So when you sit down with the players, everyone's plan's a little bit different. I like to look at it as, I think you got to double down on your strengths, and then your weaknesses, you got to be willing to chip away at them. But a lot of players, even as good as they are, they have a hard time seeing where they can still get better. And if you're not trying to get a little bit better, you will get passed.
How do you notice that? You know that. But how do you notice that?
So I'm different in a sense. Most of the players that have, I think every player on the PGA Tour that's hired me has hired me because I used to play. Knowing that I've got a feel for the game. I didn't have a successful PGA Tour career, but I did play pro for 12 years and I was really good when I was young, and I have to see them play. So some coaches will sit on the range with their players and do more of the, you know, technical work and a little bit more range time. I'll do the range time, but I go at least till Friday during a tour event that I do go out to. I watch them play Thursday and Friday. That's where you get a real feel for what a player's, you know, really doing. Plus, the player, to me, it's player, caddy, and then the coach. The caddy has the biggest insights because he's there really seeing what the mannerisms of the player is, the thought process, and then the coach comes next. And so I've had really good relationships with all the caddies of the players. If you don't, you're missing a huge insight there. So I always think of it this way. If the player's honest with himself, and some players don't like to admit where they're, you know, maybe a little bit weak or they could get better. But between a great player and a great caddy and a great coach, you shouldn't miss too much. You should know exactly what to do. Even if you wouldn't even have to look at the analytics too much, you'd be able to say, okay, like for example, so Tony, he's always been super long. He actually hits it a lot shorter than he used to. or, you know, he used to hit it so far when he's 16, 17, 18 years old, but he hit it too crooked to make it to the tour.
Sure.
He needed to rein that in a little bit, but there was some weeks where the stats on his driving showed that he wasn't doing that well with his driver as far as accuracy. And he's like, Boyd, I've never felt better over right before I hit. I feel so good over the ball. There's no discussion needed. I trust my player that he feels great over it, and that's okay. What matters, right? So sometimes, you know, the stats can be a little bit misleading, but a player always knows if he's honest, you know, what he needs to work on. And I would say,
what if what if they're not, and you have to be honest? Does that get tough?
Yeah, you have to. I think the better coach that you are, I think each year that I've coached, the more, I would use the word, just more blunt. It is what it is. And the longer you coach, you just realize, who cares if they fire you? If they know you're telling them the truth because you care about them, you want them to do well, my livelihood is based on their performance.
So right.
I have to be willing not to be a yes man. And I think the longer I've done it, the more, you know, you have tact with the way you're doing it because you don't want to hurt their confidence and you want to be respectful. But I think the longer I've been with certain players,
I think the other side too.
You don't want to waste time. Just, you know.
Well, players the need the honesty.
But it's
But
confidence, even as a coach, the more experience,
yeah,
and the more respect that you're given,
yeah,
the more leeway you get, I believe.
I agree with that.
You know, because when you're just coming up, you got to be a little bit careful not to say the wrong thing because it's not like you got five players in your stable or six in your stable, which. I want to talk about that real quick because I look at my business career similarly to what you're dealing with in terms of now managing multiple professionals. Yeah. With us, we deal with a lot of partnerships. And I remember I had one major, major partner, and they still are a major, major partner of ours. And as I started to add partners, I was worried that they may have a problem with that. But what ended up happening is they benefited from those relationships too in one way, shape, or form of the other in multiple ways. And I believe that benefit now is so crystal clear that we'd rather have somebody working with others so we have additional opportunities, so we have better agents prepared that are working more. And I compare that to everyone knows that Tony is your guy.
Yeah.
And he's been your guy for a very long time. Right. But it goes off the golf course as well.
Yeah.
Was it when you started, like take Wyndham, and when he started to come around and you started coaching him, did you have a discussion with Tony about that to make sure that he was okay with that? How did that play out?
Yeah, I think these are great questions because I like what you said about the better you get at something or the more respect you get, just the more honest the coach can be. I look at it as, the people I've coached the best are my kids. I'm telling them exactly what needs to be done, what I think. I still have a way of
saying. You can't be fired from being dad.
Yeah, you can't. But I always tell them, I can definitely get fired from being their coach. I know that because I used to work for my dad and then, you know, things got to where it was probably best for me to work with a different coach, but he was still my dad. But I think the greatest coaches tend to be the most honest, and they'll listen to you if they know you care. And I like what you said about me and Tony are tight off the golf course. I'm tight with Taylor Gooch off the golf course, and same with Wyndham. And so you have to have that personal relationship to where when you're being honest, it's, you know, they know it's out of the right, you know, it's coming from the right place. But I think one thing you said about the partners, but I did ask Tony about Wyndham Clark and other guys I added. The only player I didn't ask was Taylor Gooch. It was one of those things. I knew his mentor, and I'd passed up on a couple players because I didn't know if I wanted to add too many players and get overloaded. Because like I said before, you can only take on so many players if you're going to watch them play golf.
Right.
Because if I teach three or four guys on the tour, they're going to be on opposite ends of the draw, some in the morning, some in the afternoon. I got to at least watch five or six holes of them each. I like to only have three guys and maybe help four or five, you know, a couple other guys that just fly into here to Arizona work with me. But then at the tournament site, I'm just very honest with, hey, if you want to work with me, we're going to do it home because I got to work with these three guys that I've been with the longest. There is a loyalty there. But I will say they learn from each other. So you make a good point
when
you have
right.
partners. Like Taylor Gooch wants to be the best in the world. Well, if he's playing practice rounds with Tony Finau, who's been ninth in the world, he's played on two Ryder Cups, he's played on a President's Cup, he'll get to play with him and say, okay, all right, Tony's still better at me at this. Dang, I can do this just as good or better than Tony.
That's right.
And they start to push each other and draft off each other. I call it iron sharpens iron, right? The law of competition is better, great for everybody.
Even in practice.
Yeah, just, yes, anything. And so I think in that way, you're trying to look for good fits. You know, I'm lucky enough now to know which players I think would be a good fit for the other guys I teach and even for me. And so I have seen that a ton where Tony's benefited from some guys. Guys have benefited a ton from being around Tony. Tony's got an unbelievable mental game and emotional game for golf. He can let go of bad shots like immediately. And I think that's rubbed off on some of the guys that are younger that come up and I start coaching and they play the practice rounds with, you know, Tony as they say, okay, I get it. I get why he's really good. Not only can he drive it great, hits great iron shots, he's got a well-rounded game, but he's different upstairs in his head. And that's what you need to go from an average, I'm sure, average real estate agent to a great one is that you have to have the skills, but also the mindset to be able to do it. If you don't have both, it's hard to be elite at what you're doing in anything.
No, this is like we were just talking about. Talent and then the drive and heart, the discipline.
Yeah. No question.
Yeah.
I mean, especially in golf, there's like the mental game is so important. Not only the mental game, but the emotional game. I mean, I think that's what you're talking about.
Like, oh, yeah. It's,
And just speaking from personal experience, I had like as a kid when I was winning tournaments, I was very even.
Right.
Yeah, everything was good. You know, I was very artistic about my game. And then as I got more technical and kind of lost focus on what was important, I got a lot more emotional about my bad shots and my good shots, which that was ultimately probably what affected my career the most. Yeah. And in retrospect, you know, I wish I'd kind of realized that at the time. But I love what that you're talking about, actually going out and watching the players play instead of the range, because it's such a different thing, right?
Yeah. But they have to get along too.
And yeah, that is the tricky part. There's been times where I've taken on a new player and you're thinking, oh, crap.
I hope they mesh.
I hope they mesh.
I think you're a good judge of that. Though,
yeah, I try to, but you still sometimes miss a little bit. And so
Have you missed?
Sure. Yeah, of course. I'm not going to mention
it. Do we have any stories coming
out? No, it's just everybody's personality is a little bit different. And I do say this, like most of the guys I work with, they better have great attitudes, because if my main guy that I started with, that I'm here because of him, I mean, obviously I've worked hard and have had success with other players, but I'm very loyal to Tony
as well.
Make sure that he feels like he has his time. But if he's mentally strong and he's emotionally strong and he's a balanced person, he ain't going to want to play a practice round with someone that's bitching all the time, making excuses all the time. And so
would you say that they
fall in line and know that?
Yeah, but do you think that, I mean, it sounds like they all do root for one another.
Oh yeah,
and,
for sure.
And they get along and whatnot. I look at it from the opposite way, that a lot of people aren't that way. And a lot of people do get jealous, and a lot of people say, well, wait a minute, hold on. And they want the time.
Yeah.
I bet you see that a lot out there.
Oh, it's a tricky balance. I know. They wouldn't be on the PGA Tour if they didn't have skill and they didn't have big egos, a lot of confidence, right? It's not a bad thing to have an ego. I mean, a lot of the times, I mean, to be able to perform and to play at a high level, you got to have that supreme self-confidence. So I've had it where players feel like they should get the same time. And sometimes one player will get more time 1 week, and sometimes, you know, somebody gets a little bit more another week. But I think that it's based on what they need. And I kind of know that, but I work sundown when I'm on the road. I'm going to be there for any player that needs to get the help. And I'm always there available. And I would say it's more setting the expectation. I'm very honest right from the beginning. I'm like, here's the deal. Here's the arrangement we have. This is kind of going to be the pecking order. And if they don't like it, then at least I'm being fair. What I've learned over the years is just be honest from the upfront. I've had that maybe 5-6 years ago where I wasn't as clear. And then I'm almost like, God, I should have just said, hey, there is literally, it's hard to tell a PGA Tour player that's one of the best players in the world to get to the PGA Tour that you're going to kind of fall in this order.
Yeah, for sure. That's, you know, what I
mean. That is hard, but it's me being honest with it. And, you know, thank goodness I have taught and been fortunate enough to teach a lot of good guys too.
Sure.
I mean, I don't work for anybody that I don't like.
Those but I think that you're long. You and who you are.
Yeah.
You know, I tell you this, and you know I mean it. You're one of the best people I've ever met in my life. You're a great person. You're a great husband. You're a great father. You work your butt off. You come from a great family. I think that you've earned the respect from the people on tour to where they invite you in because they don't have to fear being around Boyd Summerhayes. Yeah. He's not going to pull the wool over your eyes. He's not going to screw you over. He's a good person. So I think you've earned that from a character perspective. But there are, as you've told me before, and we won't mention names, there are some real jerks out there that you have to avoid.
Yeah.
Whether it not just be ego, they're just built that way.
Yeah.
And the players know who those people are, right?
Yeah,
do
sure.
they find though, like, because no one really knows, and you're so in now when it comes to like being a part of the PGA, that even over the past 5, 6, 7 years, as I've seen your career explode and you've become a big name in golf. I mean, you've always been a name in golf, but I believe now,
but it's grown,
and especially with the kids too, you know, being in it, where the outsiders look in. Do those people kind of isolate themselves that are built that way with just character that like you don't want to hang out with that guy? He's just kind of who he is, or do they have like their little insulate of a couple people, but that's really about it? How do players, from a hanging out perspective, what is that like on tour?
Yeah, I mean, most golfers have a little bit of an introvert part of them. You know, there's some guys that are really social and want to be talking the whole time or practicing with somebody, but I find that 80% of the PGA Tour are introverts in some ways. I mean, you think about their life. You're traveling city to city. It's an individual sport.
Right.
You're going to, if you don't enjoy spending time alone, then that lifestyle will eat you up eventually. So you won't find a lot of tour players with a bunch of friends. It's not because they're not wanting to cheer for anybody else. It's just they get used to certain guys they like to play with. And
do you know that are there cliques out there though? Like, are there?
Oh yeah, there's certain guys that just enjoy each other. You see, and that's why I want my kids playing college golf long enough. You'll find that the friendships they have in junior golf and college golf, they're super tight on the tour.
Okay.
You know, John Rahm and Tony play a ton of practice rounds together because they train together at Silverleaf.
Right.
But a lot of, you know, Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas, they've been friends since junior golf.
Right.
You see all these throwback pictures of them. It's pretty cool. So I think each player will have a couple of their favorites. Taylor Gooch loves playing with Max Homa. They're super tight. They'd love to be Ryder Cup partners, you know, and even though Max, not my student, they're still going to go play practice rounds with them. And everyone kind of has their couple of guys they like to play with or they like to play against in practice rounds.
Sure, you know?
So have matches. That's really common on the tours.
Yeah, you see JT and Ricky together a lot. It's fun for me as an outsider and watching these players and following them on Instagram and then obviously seeing you and seeing Tony and, you know, hitting up Wyndham and whatnot. I saw he was with Canelo last weekend. Yeah. He's my favorite fighter. I hit him up. I'm like, I'm so jealous. It was amazing. So cool. But it's nice to have you as my main connection over there to know, like, if I ever want to know something, I just call Boyd. But the fun part of your job is like, you know, I've walked with you several times while people are playing. I'll probably walk with you this week coming up too and enjoy myself. Your friend Tommy's coming out.
Tommy, let's go.
So he'll have some fun. Where does it get in the weeds for you though? Like, where's the grind? Because walking the course is one thing. Where do you think that you earn your dollars when it comes to, I got to put in the effort and this is where I put it in?
I'd say a couple of things I'm decent at or that have helped me in my coaching career is I don't panic when a player gets overly emotional about how they're playing and they're frustrated. I just let them be frustrated. I'll just listen to them, let them get it out and still stick doing what they need to do. I think it's really easy as a young coach or young teacher is that the coach will react to the energy of the player. So he seems like he's pissed about the way he's playing. Okay, let's work on this. Let's try a new thing. I gotta find him a secret, you know, for tomorrow. When I've found that literally sometimes they're not mad at you. They're just needing to vent on somebody, either the caddy or the coach. That's probably gonna take the brunt of it. And I try to never take that personal. There's only a couple times where if it got personal, it just, you just kind of, you know, you talk about it, but I don't find the guys I've worked with, it's never been like that. I mean, definitely times of, you know, frustration. It's a frustrating sport.
But you're saying therapy. You're saying like acting as a therapist.
Oh, you just listen. Yeah. And then once they've calmed down, then you get back to work. It's the worst time to go to the range once they're, if they're still pissed and upset and emotional, mm-hmm. nothing's going to happen good on that range. So I think the experience that way, but I knew that as a player, like you better get it out, calm down, and then get some work done. So I think that's been helpful to me for sure. And then the one thing about coaching, and the day this changes, then I'll know I should stop coaching, is I love what I do, but I'm never happy unless all my players play good. And guess how many times that happens? Hardly ever.
Almost never.
You know, yeah. Almost never. And so it's like, you always feel for the one that's
right.
That doesn't play good.
You that's know? What I'm
and
always
so
looking
it's
at.
Like, there was one tournament last year where Tony took second at Riviera, Wyndham took a top 10, and I was helping Scott Harrington at the time, and he had a great finish. And I was like, oh, that was a fun week, because
yep.
I could be happy for all of them.
Yep.
And I think that's how I've always been. Even if, you know, Cam has a great tournament, but Grace doesn't play as good and Preston plays good. Well, only two out of the three played good. And it's hard to be
manage though, right? I mean,
but I like that. I mean, that's what keeps me driven, is that I think that that's how coaching should be, is that you care enough about your students to where it's hard to, yeah, you want them to do well. So,
is there ever, strange question.
Yeah.
Is there ever too much golf? Like, are you ever too consumed with golf to where you're like, I need to, you know, I mentioned Barb earlier, your wife.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, she is. And,
but she's part of it. You know, she's not ever in the limelight, but she's always there, and she's the best photographer probably in golf history. Right, Barb?
Yeah, she's good.
But my point is that she's so supportive.
Yeah.
Of you, of the kids, your players. She's been around it.
Yeah.
You guys have been together for decades,
yeah.
right? 20 years,
yeah.
20, over 20 years?
25 years, yeah. Married,
right.
Coming up on 22.
So she came into you guys started together, and then you were a great player. So golf's always been a part of your guys'
yeah.
life. But is there some point where she even may say, can we shut it down for a minute?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think the thing I have to be careful about is that my dad was a hard worker. That was expected in my family. I was a hard worker as a player, whether I was playing good or bad. That made it easy for me to come into coaching. I was used to being on my feet, sun up, sun down as a player. But I love golf. It's my passion. But if you never get away from something, it can get to where it can get blah. You just need to step away. So I'm intense when I coach. I'm really into it. So I need those mental breaks too. And the interesting thing is, I just coaching alone was pretty easy for me as a job until Preston started playing tournaments. Cause then I was like, dang, I didn't want to miss many of his tournaments.
Right. Right.
And then Gray started playing tournaments. And then as Preston and Grace got to be really good, it's like, I'm going, my off days of coaching are watching them, coaching them, caddying for them. 2 years ago, I was at a golf course 350 days of the year. And two of the weeks, we go to Newport and there's no golf. Well, sometimes that rule gets broken because the kids just want to play still. And so, you know, we try to make our family vacations no golf. And, you know, I just have to, when I played, I was like, man, this isn't, it's what I do. It's not who I am. And now as a coach, I'm like, man, it's what I do. It's not what I am, but it kind of is what I am.
Yeah.
You know, it is who I am. It is what our family is. It's not everything, but it is what we've chosen to do, what they've chosen to do. And so I've had to just say, hey, this is how it's going to be. I don't ever foresee being at a golf course less than probably 340 days a year moving forward. As much as Preston plays, Grace is playing and doing so well, and Cam's coming up
Cam's
wanting to be good.
Up.
So
yep.
then I start the process all over yeah. again with Cam. He's 14. If he works hard and he doesn't have any injuries or personal, you know, big problems, I don't see why he's not going to be just as good as Preston or Grace. And so I have been better lately about trying to sleep more, cut down on how many clients I teach. Cause it got to the point where I was like,
these are clients outside of the,
yeah, just at home. I used to teach sun up, sun down. And then, you
was
know,
that a grind though? You know, like before
yeah, at the start,
before
probably.
You became Boyd Summerhayes, this golf coach that everybody knows, you know, you're grinding at McDowell, right? Like teaching, teaching business professionals.
Yeah, for sure.
And I remember you told me
quite a bit.
Yeah. I remember you told me too. You go, I got to calm down. So I doubled my rates and I'm busier than ever. He's like, how does that work? I'm like, I don't know, but it's awesome.
Well, number one, it has to be your passion. You can't fake loving something, because what gets you up in the morning? Right? When you're exhausted and you've done it day after day after day. I am lucky that I do love it. I like that, like I said about, I'm only happy when all the players that are tournament golfers are play good in the same event. Well, that doesn't happen all the time. So it's always you're chasing something. And my goals as a coach are really high. Preston's goal as a player is really high. I kind of say to him, it's like if his expectations are higher than anybody else, well, no one can put pressure on him.
Right.
And I,
you know, good point.
I have a lot of goals that will be really, really hard to achieve. So it won't, I don't think I'll get complacent or satisfied until that is accomplished. And if it doesn't get accomplished, it'll be fun chasing it. So I think as far as when I say take it easy, well, starting at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock instead of starting at 6:30 or 7 on the lesson.
I think that's part of getting older.
You just pace yourself, because I do need to be around for my kids. At some point, it's like, okay, I got to pace myself. Just I'm going to be doing this for another 30 years. I don't know why you couldn't coach successfully until you're 70 or 75, because it's more your eyes and your mind. And if I stay in relatively good shape. So when you say, how do you go about it? I definitely have noticed the writing on the wall that I teach 3 full-time guys on the tour and about 3 that come into Arizona to get their work done. But then I view Preston. Now I do. You view Preston, Grace, and Cam as tour players, that meaning they have to be a priority as well. So outside of that, you know, that I say no about 90% of the time, even with the new rates and growing fees. I still say no 90% of the time. It has to be the right fit. And I will say this, that's interesting, and I think it's important to just be who you are and be authentic and to be open. If you follow me on Instagram, you will notice that Tony is my guy and that my kids and my family is everything to me. So the guys that I end up working with, they already know that.
Right.
They've seen that. And so I tend to get guys like today, Taylor Gooch is out there. And my kids are right next to him. He's talking to him. He's there inside the ropes.
This is what you're signing up for.
Yes, they know that. And they like that. Tony loves, you know, the fact that he's played a role in inspiring, being a mentor, getting, you know, my kids around those tour players and those tour events. I mean, Preston started going to tour events with me at 9. I was, you know, roommates with Charles Howell and teammates with Bo Van Pelt. He was 9. They let him inside the ropes at the World Match Play. There's only 64 of the best players in the world there. He's playing the 18th hole with Bo and Charles the day before Charles goes on to beat Tiger Woods in the first round. So he's been around the game and inside the ropes with these big time names for a long time. But Tony's been amazing to my kids. Taylor's been amazing to my kids. You know, Wyndham loves the kids. And so they know what they're signing up for. And they actually, I can tell they love it.
I think it gives a sense of normalcy. In the world of being rich, being famous, going to the best places in the world, my coach is so stable. And that's what I think people strive for, is stability in their life. So it's not just in golf, but outside the course, I want to be around good people. And there's a value to that. There's a value to being around Tony Finau, who has 5 children and is a great person. Because let's face it, there's people that are not. And the ones that are not are looking for that, but they have too big of an ego potentially to actually really have discipline to put themselves in that position. I think being around you is a safe haven for a lot of folks, in the sense of they know they're just around good company. You know, obviously I follow you all the time, and we chat a lot, but even when I'm watching you and at Silverleaf with it's you and John Rahm and Tony Finau and P and some of his buddies. Like, that's fun environment.
Yeah.
You know, it's like most people don't get to do those things.
Yeah.
So let's be appreciative of the fact that we're not only around the best of the best in the world, we're also around really good people at the same time, which makes it that much more, I think, appealing and appetizing to people. Be like, this is why I want to be around Boyd Summerhaynes, because I'm around this type of quality in my life. So I commend you for that. And I think that's that's really what you put out there too, especially with the family stuff. Because it 70% of your Instagram is Cam, Grace.
It's just a family journal pretty much, sprinkled in with a couple of tour players.
That's right.
When they do something great. But when you said something about like, where do you find that balance or how do you keep going when you're that busy? I've just tried to structure my job how I want it. As far as if my kids are out on the road with me, I don't even feel like it's work. I mean, Cam came to, Preston started traveling with me on the road at 9 and 10. Grace, she got to come out on the road, same thing when she's 9 and 10. Cam, 9 and 10 years old, start coming to the tournaments, getting used to the flow of the job. And I always call it, they're my assistants out there on the road. And it just, that makes it fun for me. So that when you're done with the grind, you're back home in the hotel or the, house you're renting. And it makes it fun for me because I feel like I can still be a dad and not miss out on that. Because I think that's what I noticed. I was teaching sunup, sundown for about 3 years before Preston started playing tournaments. And once he started playing tournaments, it just changed everything. I was like, okay, I'm not going to miss any of his tournaments.
Yep.
I'm not going to teach as many juniors because I don't want to go to a tournament and have other juniors in the field that, rightfully so, if they were taking lessons from me, they'd want me to watch them, help them warm up. Parents will be asking me questions.
Sure,
it was like, I really just have always adapted what I was doing really fast of what I needed to do, just constantly adapting as the kids got older and better and whatever. And I continually, I knew literally when Preston went to college, I'm like, whoa, I'm going to start teaching less at home because I want to go to his college events.
Sure.
Grace went to college early. I'm
right.
Like, whoa, I'm going to step back even a little bit more so I can go to her tournaments. Now Cam's hungry, wanting to get good. So I'm like, I set it up to where I know I'm still going to be happy. And then like today, Cam's out with Big Bro on number 16.
Yeah.
Preston hits it to like 3 inches. Cam, I'm like, I was telling him for 9 holes, just trying to prep him. Like, you're hitting on 16, like trying to get him nervous. Because that's what I did with Preston growing up. He was doing clinics and corporate outings with me when he was 9 and 10 years old. Just getting used to the energy of it, the nerves of it. I always say when you become comfortable, the more uncomfortable you are in those situations, you just become more comfortable, right? And so it becomes normal. And so Cam gets up there on 16 and hits a really nice shot.
Hits
the green and it barely comes off, but it's like he's starting to get the same experiences that Preston and Grace did, and it's really fun. So I think that's an important thing in business, anybody's career, you, me, anybody, is that you see what you always got to be tweaking.
That's my next question actually to you, is that I noticed that as my career has moved forward, that who I look at as somebody that I want to be like, or not necessarily even be like, but I want to have that level of success, it changes.
Yeah.
Are there coaches that you look at that not only do you admire, but you say, I would like to have that one day?
The coaches I like out there, the ones that are helping people get better, but are pretty humble. I always like that. It's like, let your work do the talking for you. And the golf is a cool sport in that, yes, you got a couple of jerks out there, but in general, I really believe 80%, 85% of the tour, I really enjoy the guys. Like I love, not even guys that I teach, just the interactions out there. There's a lot of great guys and there's a lot of cool coaches too. So I've been lucky that way. The golf is a sport that attracts a pretty cool crowd.
It does seem like at that high level though, that there is this fraternity of people really know. I mean, obviously everybody knows you, but it's weird because if I'm at a tournament, like take the waste management, I'll be around you, I'm sure this weekend or whatnot. Everyone knows you and you know everybody.
Yeah.
But that's kind of golf because there's so limited people in the world of who makes it to that level, right?
And you're traveling with those guys.
You travel with them
every week, right?
It's like NASCAR in a sense, right? Like there's only so many great drivers out there that travel to these things. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've enjoyed that. The longer I've been doing it, the more I value, the friendships even outside the guys I coach, where you're excited to see some of the guys that you're on the President's Cup team or Ryder Cup teams, and you get to know guys more in those settings. And some of the guys that are viewed as kind of the jerks out there, some of the nicest guys, and some of the guys that are kind of not that cool have a perception of being really cool. So
Oh, I'd love some names right now. Please drop some names.
You know that's not my style.
That would be great.
This is water in the just soul. Write it. You're not getting me saying.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Don't worry. That
it's true that the public perception of certain guys that are great on camera and, you know, they're the opposite behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Hey, so I'm going to put you on the spot.
Oh, let's do it.
Three of your best moments professionally.
Professionally?
Meaning as a coach or a player. If you could, I'm sure there's more than three. But
yeah, definitely not as a player. That's the cool thing now. It's no, not as a player. As a, you know, I think if I had to list it, definitely seeing Preston win his first Utah State Am. He beat a kid that is on the Corn Ferry Tour now. Yeah, Preston was 15. This player, Kyle Dunkel, was, I think, a junior in college or a sophomore. And he was out driving Preston by 80 yards. And Preston knew it was his last chance to be the youngest ever. And I flew from Shinnecock. Tony got the lead on Saturday. I took the red eye just to watch him play and then took the red eye back to see Tony play the final round in Shinnecock. And Preston made the putt on the last hole to win 3-2. And I mean, I've known for a long time, his demeanor is great for the game. He loves the game. He works hard. But when this putt went in, you know, and we try to be classy as a family, or that's what I want out of my kids.
Sure.
Like, let your clubs do the talking, you know, and his reaction when he sees the putt goes in, it's just like a full body pump and he's so fired up. And then he snaps out of it and he goes, takes off his hat and shakes his hand. And I was like, he's got the killer instinct. You know, he wants to win. He's not afraid of it. And that was a cool moment as a dad and a coach. But that was like that moment where you're like, whoa. And
your son
those
also,
pictures are some of my favorite. Like the frame by frame of him seeing the putt going in. You can see his eyes getting bigger. He's stepping away. And then it's always almost like when Tiger made his putt in 2018, where it was my favorite Tiger reaction, where he's not rehearsing that. He doesn't know what he's going to do. Right. And he just, that's what happened with Preston. I was like, wow, that was really cool.
I think what's
amazing, she can attest to that.
What's
that
amazing was like though about moment. Preston is for how young he is, his demeanor is so incredible.
Yeah.
His poise.
Yeah. It's good for golf for sure.
It's incredible. Yeah. I mean, and I think it shows why he went, like, he's a closer.
He's a closer.
You know, I mean, he's got that poise of, I'm not going to get rattled and at such a young age. So that would be one.
That's one of them. And I don't want to rank him because another one's kids. But like, I would say Grace, I caddy for her when she won the Women's State Am to become the youngest ever. She won at the same course you came up and watched Preston at Soldier Hollow. And
that course is really fun to walk, by the way.
Super fun, huh? But she she's different than Preston. She's a perfectionist. She's amped up pretty. She's wound up tight, and she had to learn how to.
Is that right?
Yeah, it took her a couple of years of like tournament golf to really be able to be calm in the fire. And she's three up. She's two up. Yeah, three up. Excuse me. She has like an 8-footer to go four up, and pretty much she only have four more holes to go. She's dormy in golf, so if she loses all the holes, she still will go to an extra hole at the end of the match. She hits it a little too hard, catches the lip, and goes by like 3 feet, and she misses it. And it was like the oddest thing where she was so close to closing out the match. Now she's only two up, and just you could tell she was really flustered. And so in that moment, I was like, okay, Grace. I'm always like, math was one of my favorite subjects in school. So I'm like, okay, Grace, statistically, her misses to the right. These next two holes are wind left to right. You're a better player. You're playing better than she is right now. Let's just do our thing. And I said a couple of different things. I talk a lot differently to my kids than what people would think. I know it fires them up and what makes them laugh and calms them down. But anyway, the very next hole, she bounced back and won the hole. And I was so fired up because I was like, she had a chance to kind of fold or just bounce back. And she did. And when I knew she was going to win, like, it's never over in sports till it's over.
Right.
But I knew it was over on 17. And I started like, I was crying. I was tearing up. And I was like, wow, this is cool. And so that was a really special moment. And then I always say, like, the next big tournament or the first big tournament that Cam wins will be unreal for me because I'm not going to be satisfied. It doesn't matter what my kids end up doing, but I got to give all my kids the same shot.
And the same effort on your end too, right?
100%. So when Cam wins his first big, big tournament, that's going to be surreal. But then professionally, I would say when Tony won at Liberty National, the playoff event.
Yeah, last year.
Yeah, because his first win in Puerto Rico was great.
Yeah.
The run of 7-8 years together has been great. The Ryder Cups, you know, he made some huge putts there, did some really cool things. But the struggle to get that second win, how hard he had to work, a couple heartbreaks, you know, with the waste management against Webb Simpson, where he birdies last two holes and then wins in a playoff with another birdie. He's had some heartbreaking losses. When he won that, that night was the coolest like golf celebration I've ever had. It was like me and Tony, you know, we don't party much or at all. And so we literally went to Roost Chris after. It was just closing up. We were so fired up that we hardly ate. Then we go to the hotel room and we're talking for a couple hours. Then I go back to my room. He texts me like 30 minutes later. He goes, I can't sleep. Come over here. And we just re-talked about the round all night. And then we hit McDonald's at 3:30. That was kind of the famous, like what went viral on the Instagram is that we literally went to McDonald's at 3:30 in the morning. And he ordered like a disgusting amount of food, like three combos and a milkshake. And so that night was really, really cool.
You know,
that's something I'll never forget is that win, being there.
Doesn't that just make it so much tighter?
Oh, yeah, for sure. That was really cool. They have one of the coolest pictures where he's pointing to me. You can see the back of my hat. Like Golf Magazine captured a couple of really cool pictures where it's like literally you don't have to say anything. And you know a lot went into that or meant to both of us. So because I'm so close to him as a friend, and our business relationship and how much we've been through and how much time we spent as families that he spent with my kids. Like, I don't know how, I mean, Tony's going to be someone, regardless of how long we end up working together, he'll always be somebody that I'm super, super grateful for and respect and admire. And so to see him win and how much it meant to him, that's what made it special to me is because when he won, it was like the weight of the world was lifted off his shoulders, and that made a ton to me.
Watching it, I mean, I was emotional. I you know, and it's funny too because Marissa knows, you know, that you know any weekend that you guys are in, we're in, and to know that monkey that was on his back, and the fact that you know you would always say too, it doesn't get to him. He's so mentally strong, but at some point, you hear it. And to finally get that off his back, I knew it was just something that you just felt, all right,
yeah,
we got it.
Yeah.
And it was real. And I know how hard you guys worked for that one. Yeah.
I would add another moment too. So I started working, me and my brother Daniel are really close, you know, not just because we're brothers, but we have a lot of common interests too. And we grew up playing together and I was his big bro. And when I started working for him professionally, about 3 years into it, he took third at the PGA. That was really cool. Like just to be there the whole week with his family and see my brother shoot 30 on the back nine. He was closing in on Jason Day and Jimmy Walker. Jimmy Walker ended up winning it. I would say that was a really cool moment just to be there as a big brother. Cause he, you know, we tend to look up. I mean, I know Tommy looks up to you. You're his hero. And that was a really special moment.
No
share
doubt.
With him. So
that's great.
Yeah. I'd say those are top moments.
What do you, before we go,
yeah,
what are your plans for 2022? What do you want to accomplish as a coach?
I mean, definitely the PGA Tour players, I think making the, winning, I would like to see them all win. And then making those Ryder Cup and President's Cup teams are huge for the players. That means a lot to them.
Are the experience, is that experience just unbelievable?
I mean, it's awesome. I took Barbara Jean and Grace and Cam to the Ryder Cup this year on American soil. That was surreal. We had so much fun. And then, you know, Preston was at ASU. He couldn't be there, but we all went to the Junior President's Cup and then stayed the next week for the President's Cup. So we've been to those matches and yeah, those are special. It's something that like you see those pictures as they're celebrating after Whistling Straits and you see what it bonds you to those guys. Like every team we've been on, like that's when I really started to know the guys because even with the coaches that are there, there's so few coaches of those players.
It's just so intimate, right?
Yeah, it's friends for life. Like some of those guys, on the other team, or on the team, Ricky Fowler, Xander Schauffele. I could list them all. Patrick Cantlay, he's a great guy. That's one that's so misunderstood. Now they call him Patty Ice and people love him, but he's always been a great guy. Awesome guy. But people didn't get to know him mm-hmm. as that. So Dustin Johnson, great guy. I mean, the team, you know, Tiger was an amazing captain. Just let the guys play. First meeting was, hey, guys, I'm not a speech guy. You guys are the top 12 players in the world. Let's go play.
Is there a,
so those teams, guys want to get on and win and go to the Tour Championship. Tour Championship means a lot to the guys. Oh, yeah. You look at the field at the top 30 at the end of the year, and it's like, okay, even if you didn't win, if you get to the Tour Championship, you know, that you've had a good year.
What is it like when Tiger's around?
The best.
Is it just, is there an aura about it, even with the players, where they just know that Tiger's here?
Okay, I'll give you an example. Okay, so Preston has always had a knack at getting autographs. He's polite. He just had a knack for it. He knew where to stand. He knew how to say things. So his first tour event, I already mentioned, it was the World Match Play in Tucson, and Tiger was just coming back after, you know, some of the scandal and whatnot, and so no one knew if he was going to play for sure. He decides to play, and he comes out to practice the night before he plays Charles Howell. No one's there. I mean, everyone's gone home. No gallery, nothing. And literally Preston is the only kid there. And I just know because of what had happened, Tiger isn't going to want to do that. And I said, Preston, he's not going to sign it. He goes, yeah, he will. Yeah, he will. I said, he's not going to sign it. So Tiger just walked right by him, didn't sign it. And Preston was so pissed. Oh, I can't say it. Tiger Woods, blah, blah, blah. He was pissed. Okay. He's nine. Preston's nine. So Preston plays the Junior President's Cup in 2019 at Royal Melbourne in Australia. And Tiger's the captain. Tiger won the U.S. Junior. Preston won the U.S. Junior. Tiger wasn't supposed to play in the pod with Tony, but since he was the captain, he just decided that the day on Wednesday that he's going to be in Tony's group, Bryson, and JT. So we get on he misses the first hole because he's the captain, gets to the second hole, and he goes, Boyd, is that your son? Because, he looks a lot like me. He goes, yeah, that's Preston. He goes, that's awesome. He played in the Junior President Cup. How did he do? And I said, he did good. They won. So as he's walking up the fairway, he waits for Preston to come inside the ropes. And that's the picture I posted on Instagram.
Yeah. Where
literally Tiger talks to him for like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And he's asking him about everything. And we get done with that week. And it was a really special week because the Junior President Cup team won. The men won. And Preston got to be around all those guys. And I said, what was the best part of the week? Talking to Tiger Woods.
No doubt.
I'm like, wait a minute. When you're nine, you hated him, you know, because he didn't sign your autograph, and literally just being around him for a couple minutes.
I remember that.
He has that effect, because these younger kids haven't seen him play great. But
when he won the
Masters and won the Tour Championship, it's like I tell my kids.
But when he comes into the room, the player, that's.
Even the guys that say they're not intimidated, well, it's because he isn't as good as he used to be. He's still great. I still think he's winning.
But there's got to be an aura. Craig said that earlier.
I think he's going to win again.
Huh?
You saw those swings.
Oh, I think he's going to win again. If he wants to win again, he will win again. And I think he will because Charlie's going to keep him hungry.
Sure.
I just knowing Tiger and what he's done in his career, I think now that Charlie loves the game, it's going to keep him wanting to just come back. And Tiger he has this indomitable will. Look at all the things that he's been through most people would just run and hide and just go away. And he keeps coming back. Yeah. I love, as a golfer and his will, I love him.
Also,
you know?
The fact that there's a decent chance he won't beat Jack's major record.
Yeah.
But he can win the all-time.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want the all-time wins. Yeah. I would love to see that for him. So,
and I think he'll do it.
And he's changed with kids. The cool thing about Tiger is that he would have never had that conversation with Preston if he didn't have his own kids. Like, he gets it now.
Sure.
And it was a player, though. He knew he intimidated people.
Sure.
And he didn't try to intimidate people, but he didn't try to make people feel comfortable either.
But that was his ace in his pocket. He knew.
Oh, 100%.
And through those 10 years, I mean, you couldn't.
The stats are,
the stats are insane, right?
Yeah, and I think, too, I truly don't believe he was purposely trying to intimidate people because he just competes that intense. But his game intimidated people. He just got it done. He was a closer. When you think of his wins, he was he had a 54 hole lead 46 times and he won 45 or 44 times of that.
I mean,
that's unbelievable.
So insane.
That's insane, right? And so,
was it 33%, 30% of the tournaments over a decade?
Through that stretch.
Didn't miss a cut for 10 years, stuff like that.
But that's why when people say, too, oh, he's the next Tiger, he's the next Tiger.
There's no other Tiger. No. There'll be no.
But especially now, because here's the difference. When Jack was playing, now the competition is so incredible.
Yeah.
You're playing against Jon Rahm, Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, Tony Finau, you can name them all. They're so good. And only this much separates. That every now and then, you know, Brooks will win a couple majors in a year and he gets lucky and maybe three tournaments in a year, which is outstanding. But no one's winning 10 tournaments in a year. And
well, I think the equipment, too, has kind of brought everyone together, too. Like when Tiger started, there was a difference in the equipment. Like if you are totally pure with those older clubs, it made a bigger difference than it makes now.
Yeah, Tiger had a bigger advantage. The guys that are long, when the advancements in technology, it's actually helping the players that don't hit as far or as pure.
Sure.
I'll tell two things really quick about Tiger that are really cool. When I'm saying like he didn't, I don't really believe he meant to intimidate people. I think his life, no one could appreciate how famous he is. Everybody wants a piece of Tiger Woods. And so I think he learned he had to just walk eyes straight forward. Even with other players, he had a couple of buddies.
He's the most famous person in the world.
He really is. So people don't see that and understand that, then that's their fault. But so Tiger was this unbelievable captain in Australia for the Presidents Cup team. Very laid back, very chill. But when it came to when he was ready to tee off, he flips a switch. Most players don't do well getting more intense. It pushes them over the edge and it makes them, you know, not perform as well. But so Tony and Tiger are warming up right next to each other because Tiger's going to lead. Tony's coming right behind him. And I can tell, I said, Abe answered, he did not mean it the wrong way, but athletes just tend to take any quote and use it as fire. So Abe says, yeah, I can't wait to play Tiger Woods. He meant it like, I can't wait to play Tiger Woods, my golfing idol. Tiger puts it on, he's smart. And so I said, hey, Tiger, I hear Abe wants you. Goes, you know what they say, boy. What comes with the bull, you get the horn. So, and then Tony tries to say something to him, and Tiger doesn't respond. And Tony looks at me like, whoa, like he just flipped the switch. And then Tony and Tiger are in the final group at the Masters
at Augusta,
when Tiger wins in 19. And Tony's making small talk on the fifth tee because there was a little wait. And Tony says something like, oh, so how are the kids? And good.
He was just locked.
Didn't say another word. And Tony's talked about that in a podcast where he's like, I just knew he was saying, I'm
good. I'm in this.
And he loves Tony. Tiger loves Tony.
But not.
I think that's what intimidated players, not just his game, but he truly competed being super intense.
Do you think that round has really helped shape Tony into being?
Yeah, for sure. That helped him win at Liberty National. It helped him believe in himself. He was playing with the greatest golfer of all time. I mean, Jack Nicklaus is incredible too, but you know, I'm going with my generation.
Me too.
And some people say Jack Nicklaus, and those two are both fair to me. It's a toss up. But Tiger I think Tony being around that situation, it'll arguably be the most memorable tournament of all time.
That's right.
Him getting, you know,
no question. And he's
like
in the final pairing.
And those pictures of them shaking hands and all that, I think that made Tony realize, I don't think I'm ever going to have a bigger stage than this. And he felt like he handled it well. He was different after that. Even though he lost, he saw the best player in the world get it done. He was in that environment. And so, yeah, Tony took a lot of positives from that where he's like, okay.
Oh, it was such a great final pairing for him to be a part of.
Yeah, it was huge.
Unbelievable. Well, I want to say thank you.
Yeah, it was a blast talking with
you.
You're my guy. Congrats on all your success.
Thank you.
You work your ass off. I've always seen that. And you're a great man. So congrats on everything.
What you got, Bobby?
So Tiger,
fire up. Yeah,
you guys seen
that
video of Tiger and Charlie? They both have the same mannerisms.
Oh, I love it.
Do you and Preston?
Oh, that's a great question.
That is a great question. They have the same mouth as me. They'll say some of the funny, you know, that we trash talk a lot in our family. That was part, like, I mean, it can get a little crazy at home. We're super competitive, but it's more just preparing them for anything that they're going to hear, too. But, mannerisms. I mean, Cam, for sure. Like, he loves wearing all black all the time now.
Boy, yeah, he's always see, known for his
blank. You do see some of the same mannerisms, but with my kids, I actually, when they play, I don't see it as much as Charlie and Tiger. Like, it was shocking. When I was watching Charlie, it was bizarre. Like, the same...
And unscripted, too.
And it's not planned. Like, I just think that it just happened that way, because I don't know. Do you think I have the same mannerisms as the kid? I don't see myself necessarily in my kids playing. I see my influence and the knowledge or the training in it, but they have their own, they're three totally different performers. You know, Preston's super laid back, almost to the point where you're like, really? You just did that in the heat of the moment, like you didn't have a pulse. He's won junior tournaments and big national events with his shoes untied. Parents are like, his shoes are untied. I'm like, yep. just whatever. Sometimes he ties them, sometimes he doesn't. He literally there's video of him playing massive tournaments with a tee in his mouth while he's hitting, kind of like the Steph Curry. Sometimes he shoots it with the mouth guard in, out, whatever, he doesn't know.
I don't
see the mannerisms quite as much, but with Charlie and Tiger, I don't watch golf when my players aren't playing. I like to watch the majors on Sunday, but usually I'm there on Sunday, so I don't watch much other than my players. I watched the father and son like every shot the last 2 years. I'm like, I love this.
It's crazy. It's so cool.
And to see that is like the coolest thing, because it's not, you can't practice that.
No.
You can't practice that. I mean, the club twirl's identical.
It's bizarre.
He's exactly like he is, that Tiger is right now, but he's not like Tiger was when he was younger.
No, I know. That's a great point. Yeah.
He doesn't look like the Tiger of 1997.
Well, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
That's because what he's around.
Of course. I mean, could you imagine being Charlie Woods? Your dad's...
Yeah.
When I say that I believe Tiger Woods is the most famous person on earth, if he's not, he's top three. I mean, when your dad's that famous... You know, to have to be around that constantly, I mean, that helps you grow up really quickly, right? Yeah. But it's just a whole different world of life. I mean, you're Tiger Woods' son, for God's sake.
No one else will understand that.
You couldn't possibly understand. Yeah. No one could possibly understand that. But
Charlie Woods is probably one of my top five players now, besides the tour guys.
You got to get him recruited. You got to start, you know.
I just like the whole idea that I see a different side of Tiger. I think he's done an unbelievable job with Charlie, because you can tell when he plays, he's playing for himself.
Sure.
He's not playing for Dad.
Sure.
And I can tell Tiger gives a lot of credit to other people, saying, oh, Mike Thomas, Justin Thomas' dad's helps him with his swing. Tiger has his handprints all over the place, but he's just stepping back to let Charlie do his thing. I can see that. And I hope Charlie makes it. I think being a father, whenever I see other father-son stuff, it's like I'll comment on other people that are having their kids out on the road, or they're watching their kids, even if it's not golf, other sporting events, I eat that up, because that's what's important to me.
Sure.
So in my mind, I can't help but think that Tiger doesn't have that goal and dream that he's going to play in a PGA Tour event with Charlie. And not just because Charlie gets an exemption when he's 15, 16 years old, but in an event where literally they have a chance to be playing together and actually kind of competing side by side. So
you said one thing to me that's very similar to that before, and then we'll go here. I asked you if you played Augusta National years ago.
Yeah.
And you said no.
Yeah.
And I said, why? And your response was, because you wanted to wait to play it with P.
Yeah.
Is that still one of your number one dreams?
Yeah. For Christmas this year, I had all five of us sign an Augusta National flag. That's my dream, for all five of us to be at Augusta National. So Grace has a chance now to play Augusta National. They have the Augusta Women's Amateur. I don't want her to turn pro until she plays in that. You know, and that was why she went to college early. That gives her the best pathway to get in that. Obviously, Preston, he could potentially have Cam on the bag when he's younger.
Yeah.
There's no reason why Preston and Cam can't be playing in the Masters together and have Grace caddy. We might even throw mom in the par three contest caddy. And that's my goal. Like,
there you go.
Augusta National to me is like a special place that would be a dream someday, is to be able to play in a practice round with them all together or at the actual tournament. You know, there's no reason why not. So yeah, I've walked the course with my players, but I still haven't played a full round out there, and I would like to do it with my kids.
You're the best. Thanks for joining us, boy. Appreciate you. Thanks for watching, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Best real estate podcast episode.
That was a great podcast.
That was great.